Hi there, my name is Jamie Mackay and I lead the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. The following podcast is part of a series of interviews with graduates of the part-time M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in the Arts programme. This programme is delivered on a blended learning model but can also be studied fully remotely. All participants on the programme have a role as an arts educator and the programme is designed to help them develop their teaching practice and their arts practice, and it culminates in a self-designed final project. For more information on the programme, check the website on rcs.ac.uk/med. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be talking to Gavin Crichton. Gavin is the founder and artistic director of Active Inquiry in Edinburgh and has over 20 years' experience of running both small and large-scale community arts projects. Gavin is the leading expert in the Theatre of the Oppressed in Scotland and is currently working on a long-term project called Drama for Democracy, which is exploring how theatre spaces can be used as sites for participatory democracy in Scotland. Could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Sure. So I'm Gavin Crichton, and I am the Artistic Director of Active Inquiry Theatre Company in Edinburgh. And Active Inquiry is a company that works mostly with non-theatre professionals, so in kind of community contexts, mostly with adults, although not exclusively with adults, but most of my work is with adults in a community context. And a lot of it is informed by the Theatre of the Oppressed, which developed by the theatre director, Augusta Boal, but again, not exclusively. But I think probably what I would say mostly is it's like using theatre as a tool for learning and for dialogue. It's not necessarily about teaching theatre, if you like. It's using theatre as a tool, although part of it is about teaching the tools, but it's using theatre as that tool for learning.
And when you're working with learners, what is your goal then?
This is a tricky one, what my goal is. I think I've got a few, but I think first and foremost, it's to really to enable people to have space to be able to think critically about whatever that subject is. And through that critical thinking comes through, of course, individual reflection, but also crucially through dialogue with others. So to really find a space where you can have really meaningful dialogue with others, where disagreements are welcome and where we can kind of think about that. And I suppose my ultimate goal, which is always a big aim, is to drive change, is that my work actually drives change and transformation in society, which is a big goal, but that is the ultimate reason I do it.
What barriers get in the way of achieving that goal?
I mean, I think, and this is maybe a tricky one, but the main barrier is I would say life. And I don't mean that, you know, I'll explain a little bit what I mean by that. I think it's mostly for the people we work with. So a lot of the people that we work with on a regular basis are homeless, recovery from addiction, have experienced domestic violence, mental health issues, various things like that. Obviously, I don't want that to define them, but I'm just trying to say that's the kind of context that we work in. And so, people have chaotic lives. and so getting people in the same space at the same time consistently and in a kind of headspace or a space where they can be open to that dialogue and what we're wanting to do is hard. You know, it is hard to do that. And so that is probably what I would say is the biggest barrier. I think another barrier is probably, you know, being in the kind of not in a public sector or anything like that is funding. You know, it's the precarity of the funding cycle. It's having to put little bits aside in case you don't get funding, but that at that time and but still wanting to keep connection with our participants. So that kind of precarity of the funding cycle is probably the other big barrier.
And what strategies do you use to help you achieve your goals and or deal with these barriers?
Well, I think in terms of, like, you know, life getting in the way, it's probably Probably a little bit of persistence is probably in there. So we are continually phoning people and texting people, emailing and meeting people, and kind of, so that kind of way of not letting us slip off the radar is probably something. I think finding times and spaces and ways that participants can engage with us that suits them, rather than always expecting them to find to kind of connect with us in the way that suits us, is important. So we try to solve access issues where we can. We currently, for example, do work in hybrid because we still have people that can't come into the space. So we're kind of having to do that. We'll change times when we need to, and so there's lots of things that we do. Get people taxis if they have to get to, place on time. There's lots of things that we try to do to enable people to be in that space together, but that's still very, very hard to do. So I think that, I mean, that's what we try and do in terms of like the life barrier, if you like. Find ways in which we can be as accessible as possible and keep that conversation going. I think in terms of like the goals and what we're trying to achieve, it's really using some of the techniques or some of the ways that the Theatre of the Oppressed offers us, using a lot of image work, using a lot of allowing us to do stuff with our bodies and then reflect on that afterwards. I think we find really, really useful. So not spending too much time talking, getting people moving, getting people doing things, getting people discovering things, and then kind of reflecting on that, and hopefully that kind of gives a bit of a space for people to kind of think that they've got something to say. I mean, I think that's always one of the big problems. People don't think they've got anything useful to say or any knowledge, and so building a space where people feel actually we do have knowledge. That knowledge is kind of useful and valuable, and it actually is useful in this dialogue together. So, I mean, that's the kind of work that we try to do to achieve those goals.
Thank you. So, how do you measure your success as an arts educator?
Measuring success is always a really tricky one, I think, because not that I'm saying people in formal education measure their success by results, because I know lots of people that don't do that. But we don't have that as a kind of formal exams or anything like that, or tests or things like that to kind of see. So there's always a tricky one. I'm thinking about this, and I think that one big success we have, or one thing that I see, is people consistently turning up and coming along. That's a huge success for us in terms of some of the barriers that I was talking about, and people kind of. So that's probably the first thing. I think I measure success by seeing how people are beginning to think critically, and begin to not change their opinions so much, but certainly think more critically about their opinions and learn from others. So I feel like that's one. Another one that I look for is people beginning to move away from thinking that any whatever problem that they have is an individual fault. So kind of, yeah, the work we do is we start from individual experiences, but we begin to connect that to wider structures and problems in society. And I think that when people I see people starting to connect their problems with other people's issues and starting to see actually, it's not me as an individual that is at fault here. There's actually something wrong with wider society that needs to maybe be questioned. Then I start thinking, I think that's kind of a success. Yeah, long term, it's a difficult one, because I really would love to be able to measure how we contribute to kind of concrete objective change, rather than just, I'm sure we do contribute to change in individuals and people thinking, I'm sure that's there. But for me, it's like, what does it mean to actually have concrete objective change coming out of our work? And I think that's a really hard one to measure. And so I haven't cracked that one yet. And maybe it's impossible to measure, but it's certainly the goal.
And how would you describe the ideal relationship between you and your learner?
I think this has been said a few times before, but trust has got to be at the heart of it. It has to be there. It has to feel like they are trusting me and us. I'm one of a team, so I can't always just talk about me. But they are trusting us, and because we obviously have to make decisions and things without them all the time. And so they're trusting us to be able to make those decisions and to be able to take care of them, I suppose, and not put them in situations where they're going to be re-traumatized or anything like that. So I think that's got to be there. But we've got to trust them as well. We've got to trust them that they're in this, that they're willing to, they're going to be here, they're going to kind of be part of it. They're going to turn up to rehearsals, performances. We've got to have that trust in them as well. So I think that's really important, trust. I think a democratic relationship is probably one that I think it's kind of, I think that's probably, for me, it means fairly transparent, really. We're all transparent about what we're wanting for this process, in this process, and what we're trying to achieve here, and recognizing that those things might be different, you know. So I'm always a little bit critical of, like, critical educators who are, about really achieving some big societal change, but they don't really share that goal with participants. It's almost like trying to trick people into that. So we try to be open that this is what we're trying to do. And so for some people, that's too much, but they're still okay to come along and be part of that in there. For them, that just be having the confidence of coming along and being with others is enough. But I feel like if we know that where we're all coming from, there's at least a sense of being of transparent. I don't think it's about resolving tensions, but recognizing tensions that are there. I think it's going to almost be impossible to resolve every tension, but I think that recognize they're always going to be tensions in a group of adults with very experiences with, so recognizing those tensions. And I think, like, everybody feeling that we're having a say in the decisions that are affecting us in this group. And I think for me, that's a really important one, because for me, that's a metaphor for life. There's a sense of, like, building something in a theatre space or in a rehearsal space, which is what we want to see in wider society. And it's that sense of, like, all having trust in one another, having a relationship, transparency, dialogue, but also a sense that, the decisions that are made about what we do, we all have a bit of a say in those. So for me, that relationship is really important.
What job title are you most comfortable with then?
I think probably facilitator is probably the one that I'm most comfortable with. I think there are, obviously, I'm an artistic director. That's my official job title in the company. I don't really like teacher because I feel like it has so many connotations with formal education, and particularly adults have a lot of issues with that. And so I kind of stay away. Director, depending on the context, I can be a director, but that has very theatrical things that people get a bit scared by. Sometimes the Joker, which comes from Theatre of the Oppressed, but I think facilitator is nice because it's a way of, like, you're facilitating people learning in the space, and I feel like that is what I kind of feel most comfortable with.
What three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
I think I've talked about all of these before already, but I would say trust has to be at the top, because nothing can be done if there isn't trust there. A lot of the people we work with have been let down again and again by professionals, and so we could be another professional that lets them down, and that's just really, really important that we're not seen like that. Democracy. I know that's a tricky word to define, but I think I've started to define it a little bit before, really. So that sense of everybody feeling they have a say in the group and are heard in the group. And I do think change or transformation would be the third one, because that for me is the core of why I'm doing it. Is like I feel like we could have a much better society that we live in, and these are the skills I have to hopefully contribute to that in some way. So that is what drives me probably the most personally.
Great. Thanks, Gavin. I'm going to take a slight switch of the title question now. So if you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
Yeah, I was trying to think about this song. So there's a few, but I think what who I would, the person that I would love to have a conversation with is Paulo Freire, who was a critical educationalist from Brazil, had a big influence on Boal and the Theatre of the Oppressed, wrote a kind of seminal text in the 70s, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is still one of my most favorite books. But I think Freire was some, when I first encountered Freire at university, it was amazing for me. I kind of got education, not that I was really bad at school or anything, but I just kind of chugged along at school, really, I would say. And when I read Freire, it was like, ah, okay, education can be more than that. It can be much more than just kind of learning and regurgitating. And so, you know, it can be about change, and everybody has and knowledge is not just something academic. Knowledge is, there's so many different types of knowledge, and they're all really, so all of this stuff, I was amazed when I was introduced to Freire, and I think that I would really enjoy having a conversation with Freire.
Okay. And if you could ask him one question, what would it be?
I think Freire was such an optimist about, I think, you know, talked a lot about hope and love and the power of education to change things. So I would think it would be something around looking at today's society, where I feel like we are so polarized very quickly. There's very little space for dialogue, I feel, because you have to choose a side very quickly. And I feel like I would like to ask him, is there space for dialogues? Do you still think dialogue is a useful thing, or how do we create spaces for dialogue, probably in society now, which has become very anti-dialogue, I think.
And how do you think you would answer?
Well, I think because he was an optimist, I think that's what I get from his writing. He was an optimist. I never met him, obviously, but I think he would probably say, yes, dialogue is more crucial now than ever, and we have to do it. But in terms of finding spaces, I think what he might say would be that we need to build structures for dialogue into our society. We need to have spaces in neighborhoods where people come together. We need to build into our local governments and local decision making that people need to come together, and either that's more informal or formal places. But I think, and there needs to be, you know, support for these from governments as well as there kind of being grassroots. So I think we need to kind of really start to change the work, the structure. And I really think that he would probably say, or maybe this is me hoping he would say this, but he would probably say something about, like, we do need to get offline a bit more, and get offline a bit more and get into spaces together a little bit more. I think he would probably say that.
Great. Thanks, Gavin. It's a final question. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
Probably just like some of the things that we've been, or I've been thinking about, like, recently about it, you know, like, where is the, I think it's maybe about just the state of where we are in society at the moment. And, like, so for us, I'm thinking about what's important for me and us is, like, where are there places for hope? And it's not about just, so I still think it's really important to talk about oppression and injustice, and things like that go wrong. But I think we have to be really careful that we're still looking for places where there is hope and where we have hope. I think that's really important. I think another one that we consider a lot at the moment is about where the boundaries are between ourselves and our participants. You know, because I think, but certainly since the pandemic, need, if you like, has grown so much. And so I think, yeah, I think it's really important for us that we're seen as theatre workers. We're not seen as social workers or anything like that. So I think there's, like, It's really important to think a little bit about boundaries. And I would say that's one of the things we're talking a lot about at the moment. And then the final one is, and it's kind of the work we're doing at the moment through a big project called Drama for Democracy, which is about where theatre and the arts, I suppose, have a space in terms of like participatory democracy and really making people feel like they are part of those bigger decisions that affect them in society. And I feel like, you know, problem is governments often still see art as a nice thing to have, which it is, of course, a nice thing to have, but it's actually can be really useful at tackling some of these big problems that we're facing. And I really think that there is a place for art and theatre in that. And that is what we are, where we're trying to kind of carve out a space at the moment.
That's great, Gavin. Thank you so much for your responses. Really rich and interesting content there. So I'm sure our listeners will enjoy them very much. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.